Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
Today, we're talking about living in tension. This is an important concept. I'm learning as I'm going through school how difficult this is for people. And it's not just in school. It is in every facet of our lives.
Yeah.
And so I figured we should just talk about this. So the concept that I'm working from is, and you can argue and debate me. You know, I'm not on social media. Y'all can yell in the mirror for this theory if it's not working out. But comfort is the chief goal for all human activity. That's my premise.
Okay.
Everything that we do is myopically focused on our comfort or achieving that comfort.
Okay.
So whether that's the jobs that we work in order to make the money that we have so that we can come home and be comfortable, or live a comfortable life, or not have to worry about money, the relationships that we're in that work towards us being able to have a safe, comfortable space to emote and be vulnerable, and we don't have to be on edge about how that's going to turn out for us. The way we move through life, I was trying to think of a way where it's not geared towards that comfort, and I couldn't. So you may, y'all may out there and let me know, and I'd be open to hear that because I want to. Like I said, I always agree with me. Like, that's why I want to hear other opinions.
Because okay.
If you leave it up to me,
we're going to agree.
Me and me will agree.
Okay.
All right. So because that's the case, there's this unspoken ellipses behind everything that we do that kind of lends itself to this idea that, you know, you'll do such and such and such, dot, 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 and live happily ever after. Like,
right.
that's what we want. That level of comfort is kind of the goal. And I don't know if that's conditioned or just something that's innate, as innate to human beings.
Okay.
So this idea of comfort kind of works to help us navigate this life, but wanting to achieve that comfort and not obtaining that comfort creates what we experience as tension.
Okay.
In the absence of that comfort, dissonance takes place and we're like, something is not right.
Right.
The goal has not been reached.
Right.
And so understanding how that is, naming that, and learning to live with that is what this episode is about.
Okay. So I can see where you would say that the chief goal is to create comfort. I think that this is why we innovate, because we are trying to make the things that we have to do or want to do, we want to do them better. We want to do them faster. And now we've added value to this balance where we have this good life. I do not think that it has always been across the course of human history that everything we've done with the chief goal of comfort.
Okay.
But I do think that in modern history, comfort has become something worth pursuing, you know, within the systems that we find ourselves in. So that's the first thing. But this idea that understanding the difference between where we are and where we want to be and what it will take to actually get there, to act upon the path that we know will lead there, is what leads to sometimes this tension. And we're not using words like conflict or stress, because tension is exactly what it sounds like. It's the holding of pressure until it is somehow, you know, released. And trying to find balance is something that is not, it's not conflict laden. It is trying to find even keel, which is tension in and of itself. What can you push against or pull against that actually gives you balance? So that's kind of what we're also talking about. We're not just talking about the stress making all things work at one time. We're talking about how we feel as we're in the process of doing something.
Right, living in that tension or that place until that balance is achieved. Yeah, I'm still trying to think through. I think you're right that maybe it is just modern times. And if that were the case, then that would lend itself to the idea that it is a conditioned response or a conditioned way to live as opposed to it being innate. But it's persistent. It's never
always
not present.
Yes.
And so instead of fighting against it, the trick is learning to live in it.
Yeah.
And part of that learning, I guess, would be understanding the reason for it, or at least shedding the idea that comfort is an achievable goal.
Yeah, because so learning to live within it. I just feel, again, when you're talking about the difference between where you are and where you want to be, sometimes that is a geographical distance. You know, I want to move out of state and I want to, you know, restart my life in mythical Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, I want to do these things. There would be some tension between your obligations, responsibilities, and actual rooting where you are versus where you see yourself, you know. Some sacrifices have to be made. Some changes have to be made. Mm-hmm. These are the processes that you might find yourself in, major change processes to get to where you want to be. But sometimes it's not tangible. It's not a location you're trying to reach. It's a state of mind you're trying to reach. It's a state of accomplishment. So, you know, when we talk about rebuilding and restoration of self, your energy, your ability to persist, your ability to meet your goals, learning to live in that space where things are not yet done, but they're happening. I think it just helps you build back up your patience. I have struggled so much with just that. Sometimes I'm just like, wow, I have no patience. And I often wonder, you know, has it always been this way? Or do I feel like maybe my reserves were sapped in some way? I think it's probably a healthy bit of both. You know, I haven't always had to be super patient about things because I'm fiery. I get up and go get, you know, go do something. But I also think that you have to learn again how to be patient with what it takes to build up these things that we say that we want. So you want to restore your ability to have trust or to have friendships. You got to be willing to stand in that very uncomfortable space where you realize you're not yet there, but you're aiming toward it. You want to undertake a field of study, which you can relate to. I've done it myself. I'm thinking about doing it again. Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable with having started, but you know that the finish line is farther away from you than you might have first anticipated? You know, life will teach you those lessons. But again, I think it's good to be able to stop and say, what good happens in those undefined spaces of growth or of uncertainty?
Right. So there is good that happens. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that I'm thinking about it for me is that there's an adjustment that occurs that says, this thing that I'm living in is normal. Like, this is the way it is. So the analogy that the closest analogy that I can think of is gravity. Gravity is always working on us. Gravity is always holding us back. It's holding us down. It's forcing us to use muscles in different ways. And it's so persistent that there are very few places on this earth that we can go to not feel it. Now, one time I went and had flotation therapy, which is basically, when I was growing up, they would have called it sensory deprivation.
Okay.
And you go into this salinized water tank. Mm-hmm. And you just lay there and float, and there are no lights. There's no other, there's nothing else on your senses. You don't feel the water. You don't feel any of this stuff. And you just in there for who knows how long. I mean, they know how long because I paid them up front. But to you, it doesn't feel like the time is moving. You don't have any indicator that anything is happening. And that was it's therapy because that's the first time that I've ever been without this feeling of gravity, this feeling of the wind against the hair on my skin, being aware of my surroundings. And that, the absence of that is healing. And so that's what, now, when I think about it, I've had that one time in my whole life. Mm-hmm. Every other time, gravity has been holding me down.
Right.
So that's what I've kind of related this tension to, or identified as this tension. Like, it's there so much, but there are ways and areas that we want to try to avoid it. And that may be those times when we're in that tank and saying, okay, I would rather not have this tension in my relationship, or I would rather not have this in my vocation, or I would rather not have this in my spiritual experience.
Right.
And it's those times where we have an expectation of reducing the drag of the tension, and it doesn't happen. where it typically caused problems for me.
Right.
The problem is, like, I may not want detention there, but I'm dealing with other people who may have different priorities. They may be okay with detention there mm-hmm. at work, and they may like all this drama at work. They may like the thrill of,
so
you know,
shameful. So many people can relate to that.
Yeah, they may be their whole thing. Like, they looked forward to this. They got up and had their coffee and was hyped to go there and be an asshole.
Be messy.
Like, that's their thing.
Dang.
So it's when my expectations of it clash with someone else's lack of priority,
mm-hmm.
Lack of prioritizing, that's that comfort for me.
Right.
Where that they tension really ratchets
mm-hmm.
up.
So it's going to be present, but I think you just said something that is valuable. You said the absence of all of that stimulus was healing. So sometimes in that tense space, actual healing is taking place and you just have to endure it. I mean, it is literally like watching the grass grow. So, and I'm saying this again from a place of experience, because sometimes you can find yourself in a mind space where you're like, I don't even know how to get back to, let's say, zero, like the starting point. Yeah, I know I'm at a deficit. So I want to get back to the starting point and hopefully, you know, get beyond that. The moments where I felt like nothing was happening was when the actual growth was happening. So I say, oh, my reserves of patience have been depleted. Well, when I felt most challenged in that, that's when I would realize that, no, they're indeed there, but they don't fall out of the sky. You learn patience by being patient.
Yeah, that's the only way you can.
Oh,
learn.
My God. So imagine my frustration with that. But but I'm learning, because that's a gift I give to myself. You know, when I'm impatient with others, I'm impatient with myself. It's funny because, like, I journal all the time and I'll acknowledge it. Like, patience is not my thing. But as I was identifying it and wanting to get better at it and wanting to approach it more positively, this is not something I'm losing. This is something I'm gaining. I'm gaining my ability to be patient. You know, I'm not losing my ability to be instantly satisfied. I'm gaining something. Yeah, I just really had to work on this. So, but it was those moments where I was like, nothing's happening. Okay, why? It was because I was not challenged to demonstrate where my growth had occurred. When those moments or those challenges arose, that's when I could show myself, you're not where you were a year ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was. Learning how to sit in that, in the discomfort, in the undefined, builds something in us. You know, it draws out different characteristics that you can't see when every need is satisfied instantly, every desire is given into, or every question is, you know, responded to positively.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see certain things in yourself or in others when things flow like that. And I don't think that's realistic, because that's only that perfect in as much as I don't interact with anything or anyone else. As soon as I cross paths with another person, as soon as I cross paths with my family, with my children, with my spouse, with my coworkers, whatever, their energy, their lives can interact with mine and throw things off. Create these moments of uncertainty. You won't always have to move things forward so fast just so that they'll be defined. Something good can happen in that space where things are almost like, I don't know, like the period of waiting.
Mm-hmm. It's like lifting weights. Like, you don't get stronger by not lifting weights. Right. You get stronger by actually the exercise of lifting the
weights. And just squaring up with how heavy sometimes right. things may feel.
It should be heavier. Mm-hmm. But you can't lift weights all the time. You won't get stronger if you constantly lift weights. And that's the tension that becomes difficult, especially for where we're experiencing life today. So, for instance, in racial tension, I mean, for Black people, this is, and it's not just Black people, but this, for some people, is a persistent form of tension that we cannot alleviate. Like,
yeah.
So, like, in my example with gravity, like, I may not have access to that sensory deprivation tank, but I can lay down.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel it a little bit less. I can disperse that gravity across my body so it's not hurting my back so much.
Mm-hmm.
With things like racial tension, maybe the laying down is that cookout that we're around each other
right.
and we don't have to think about
coming
it.
Coming off social media.
Right, coming off social media. Those mm-hmm. are things that must be done, not for you, but for me, like ways to alleviate the tension, because in the presence of persistent tension, you can't survive. You can't grow. And you need those moments of growth, which means you need those moments of rest in between the tension. The success of living with it is finding ways to alleviate it, even for a moment.
Yeah.
So that you can get back out there and be tense again.
Build it up to a point of needing to lay down one more time.
I said I was observing this in school because I'm looking at people who have actively avoided tension in their spiritual experience. Like someone like me who does a podcast about this and thinks about these things a lot.
Yeah.
I don't mind. Like I thrive in attention. So I prioritize it differently with respect to this. Whereas other people like, I don't want that tension there. So when like, say we read something like the Book of Joshua and are confronted with the idea that the God of the Book of Joshua is a horrible, vengeful, abominable God who worked with a group of people to exterminate another group of people for no other reason than to give the people that were loved a gift. That gift was land that did not belong to them.
Wow.
And so confronting the tension of a God who is to one people a deliverer and to another group of people a conqueror is tension that we actively try to avoid in our spiritual spaces. And avoiding that tension does not equip us for when we need to have that fortitude, when it's time to look at immigrants at a border, when it's time to look at Native Americans as we want to run pipeline through their water source. Failing to see that tension is dangerous to people. So prioritizing our comfort is not something that other people can afford.
Right.
So that's kind of so I guess, like we said, the cookout may be one way to alleviate that tension. Just trying to think of strategies to do that as we confront the tension that would help us be better human beings to other people is one of the things and one of the drills in trying to navigate this tension that we always have. So the first thing is you actually got to see it. Like you actually have to open yourself up to the reality that this is a real thing that I have to deal with.
Right.
So whether that's, you know, this God is not a good God. Like, I know y'all want to say God is good all the time. No, that is not the case.
Listen.
If you're Canaan, that is not true.
We have talked.
If you're the Amalekites, that's not true.
We have examined this. I feel like, you know, as far as just tension within spiritual spaces and spiritual understanding, it is becoming a constant because even this activity is a constant in my life now. And I just find, again, like you just said, I just find myself thinking about a lot more things. But we cannot be afraid of our thoughts. Like we cannot be afraid to explore those things that make us uncomfortable or those things that challenge us in our critical thinking. And I think like that's just where I am. Like I'm being exposed to information and perspectives and opinions, and that is fine. I know what my foundation is, but even I have questioned it. Even I have gone through cycles of, you know, anywhere from what I would think is almost clinging to what I believe or believed in versus there are times where I'm extremely critical of my current perspective. In it all is this idea that the information and I, as the thinker, and me as the processor of this information, we can work this out. Like, it doesn't have to bowl me over. You know what I mean? And sometimes it is taking it in a piecemeal fashion. Sometimes it is disconnecting from it so that you can refresh and renew and look at it with fresh eyes or approach it with a fresh ears, you know, a renewed heart, you know, just with your mind and your heart opened up. But we thrive because we're striving. We're trying to understand. When things are not understood, that's where you can make something happen. If everything is clearly defined and easily accessible, there's no growth in that. There's no stretch in that. You have to be willing to explore what makes you uncomfortable. You have to be willing to understand why it makes you uncomfortable. And once you kind of, you know, start wrapping your mind around that, You might even be willing to look at yourself and say, now, why is it that I persist in this position? Or what am I willing to do to change it? How do you do that if everything is comfortable?
Yeah. And so as you're looking at yourself, thinking those things, well, for me, I've recently, within the past few years, been confronting the question, what am I doing from that person's perspective? Yes, this is helping me. What is it doing for them? And that has been an area of tension, as I understand it. There's always someone else with a different view of what I'm doing.
Of course.
And so the faith piece matters to me, because there's so much of what I do that is built on a foundation of faith that was a shoddy foundation, because I never confronted the tension that was present there. I never looked at it. I never understood that God was both deliverer and conqueror in the same story. I never understood things like when Jacob wrestled with the angel, or the theophany, which was God at that point. When Jacob wrestled with God, as one of my professors says, God cheats and wrenches Jacob's hip out of joint because it was getting late and God didn't win.
And his show was about to come.
God couldn't win the fight, and so God cheated. Like, I haven't looked at those things. And so much of my theology has been built on things that I've actively avoided seeing. And so I treat people based on that. This idea of manifest destiny was not unique to that group of people during that time. There are different ways where I feel entitled to things because I may have called myself a child of God. There are certain things that belong to me.
Okay.
And so without seeing the impact, or living in the tension of the impact of that to other people, then I am daily repeating those mistakes and inflicting that harm and causing more tension to someone else. And so being mindful of the fact that, I got some work to do on myself, but also on the things that built me, on the things that I necessarily hold dear that should be interrogated. This is not easy work. Y'all are listening to this podcast because I think you're doing some of the same work that we're doing, where you're evaluating what it is that I believe. Why do I believe it? What impact does that have?
Yeah.
This question of tension is the chief question, because you're trying to resolve it. Is it resolvable? I don't know. I feel like there's maybe a healthy way to exist with it.
Yeah.
But you're not going to remove it.
No, I don't. I don't think it ever goes away. I think that, you know, like we've said previously, we are complex beings. And it, at most, I think you learn how to better navigate and better manage. You would never get away. Because it's such a source of creativity and conclusion and such a strong propeller forward in a process, you'll never get rid of tension, conflict, stress. It never goes anywhere. But I think you get better and you increase what is in your toolkit to manage it, to navigate it, to overcome, you know, and to better see how you're achieving. You know, sometimes I'm my own worst critic, but there are times where I really have to stop and take into account what has actually happened versus maybe what I thought should happen, or what I, you know, maybe what I originally wanted. So when I take into account what has actually happened, the painstaking growth, you know, the restoration, the reclamation of a whole entire life, you know what I mean? Like, I am in charge of my whole situation. That I don't know that I would be where I know I am. It is not anywhere where I thought I would be by now, or where I think I could be going forward. I know I got to get better. But when I stop and take into account what I've already accomplished, I can ease up on myself.
How have you gotten better? Like, what steps have you taken to get? I'm not challenging you. I know you. I know you as a person. But I'm saying, for the purposes of the people listening to this, what strategies would you implement, or have you implemented, for getting better for yourself?
I always say, being gentle with myself has made a huge difference, just changing my expectations of myself. So it's still very much so goal oriented, but just being gentle in understanding that I've never had to do the things that I've had to do. You know, when I had to, using words like rebuild, when I had to cut losses, when I had to sacrifice, when I had to lose, when I had to sit out, you know, and I had to recuperate, I just had to be gentle with myself that was the path of my life, you know, at that time. Being gentle means that I was gentle with myself as I would have been with somebody else's loved one, because I believe that I am deeply compassionate to people who are in pain. So when I gave myself the space and the right to say that it was pain, or to say that it was hurtful, some of the things that I was going through, I reclaimed a space for myself where I could then be as sweet and as gentle and as kind as I needed to be to move myself forward.
Naming that is so powerful, because now you actually, it's like when you know something's bothering you and you can't really put your finger on it, and then all of a sudden you get it.
Yeah.
Just the getting it
starts. It's huge.
Right.
Because so, then you're like, oh.
Right, now I can do something.
That's what it is. Yeah. Yes. And again, I mean, taking away any narrative that was not my own and did not serve me was extremely healing to me, because when I take your voice out of it, maybe I can hear a little bit more of myself. Mm-hmm. And that's a power move. And I think that's a power move for people who are raised to put other people's perspectives and voices in front of their own, conditioned to do that, trained to do that, traumatized into doing that. As you remove those other narratives, the voice that you hear underneath all of that is your own. And then when you start to use your own voice and you hear things that you did not create in it, that's when you start to, you're changing your internal conversation, and it'll begin to come out differently. That is the grass growing work, because that is a daily battle, right? The battle between what you've experienced that traumatized or grew fear in you versus what you want to experience in the future, that you actually want to heal those things, or you want to counterbalance, you know, that negativity.
Yeah.
That is the thankless work of healing.
Yeah, I think for me, like, shutting up is one of those effective strategies. Mm-hmm. Like, just listening to
more.
What other people are saying, and not just regarding my impact on them, but just their experience as they live, like learning from other people, people who I would never want to learn from or have any interest in. Like, I don't care about what's going on with you. I got all my stuff is enough. Like, that's huge for me. Educating myself is enormous.
I think I've always had a very intellectual engagement with other people. So mine was more so like when you say learning more and opening yourself up and reading more. It was that, but it was also feeling more.
Yeah,
like you, for me,
you're better
I had
at that
to do
me.
That.
Like you,
really?
Yeah, you.
Oh man,
the stuff that when I was on Facebook, the stuff that you were posting, I'm like, God, I need to get smarter immediately, because I'm not there yet. Like so. Just where you the way you move is different. So I would never recommend this.
Okay. But
in episode one of this show, the episode is called Hypertension.
Okay.
JW and I talked about a similar concept. So I think I want to go back and listen to that.
Okay.
It might be the biggest mistake of my life. But
no.
I think
it's where it all started.
That may be extending this conversation.
Okay.
So I hope that's the case. I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That was JW's term too. He coined that. So it was probably better than had I thought of it. So, I don't think there's anything else for me to say on this one.
Okay.
Yeah. See y'all next week for Faith Uncut. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.